Have you noticed that if you're in Belford and you're at Tipperary Springs or maybe Lake Jubilee, the forest is really quite different to if you're in Hepburn, you go to the Blowhole, it just looks really different. It's different colour, trees are different heights. That's because the Great Dividing Range, it runs along, we go down to the slopes heading down the range just from the Delta Hepburn Divide. So really, quite a different place. And where it goes down from the range, that's the Goldfields bioregion. And Goldfields covers like Hepburn and out here, you're heading up towards Casamay and the upper Logan up here. And then what is this is the Victorian volcanic plain. So we've got all these high sort of upland areas that's like really, 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 really ancient sedimentary soil that was pushed up so long ago. And then these are the new lava flows that came through. So the soil is completely different. And that's where farmers ran their sheep, or where it's down here where it's a bit more rain, grow potatoes. This very soil is really fertile. So that's kind of like a schematic way to show how there's really quite different groups. So I'm a bit centered on the gold fields and Central Victorian Outlands, because that's sort of my local area around here. But I will be talking a little bit about the Clunes Forest. Has everyone heard of box ironbark forest? We're going to look a little bit at that. But I'm not today going to talk about grasslands, because that's a whole different, amazing, new realm with a completely different set of animals and also a very different state of being, because there's only 0.01% less at the moment. Does anyone here have grassland on their property? You? Is it with red thumbs or? And what's your main eucalypt tree? So go on to the next one. Ecological vegetation classes are a way of describing the vegetation. All you need to know from this picture is look how many different kinds there are. This shows the extent of the vegetation. You can see in the center of the Victorian uplands there's hardly any there. That's because it's all being preferentially treated because it's fertile soil. So if I was to put an overlay here or like another map on top of a conservation system, like how rare it is, it's like in Central Victorian uplands, it's not that rare, but in the Victorian volcanic plain, pretty much any vegetation that's there is rare and is completely deserving. In Central Victorian uplands, the vegetation exists, but it should be preserved because it's either in really good quality or because it's part of such a bigger picture. But that's it for these sorts of things. So we're going to start from the Tall Wet Forest. This is actually Nolan Creek picnic ground, and it's hard to get the context, particularly when you're looking at a laptop, but that's the bridge. So a human would be a little tiny person like that. So you have tall trees, massive trees, because they've got pretty good soil and pretty good rainfall for the region. So what I'm going to do now is just talk about animals that would be found pretty much here in this kind of wet forest and nowhere else. This also applies to like parts of Trenton, Tipperary, some of the other parts of Tipperary. I mean, I have to say around the Lake Jubilee. So I've seen some of these animals there. This is the creek. This is in summer, but it still has water in it, which is really nice. This is a really good quality creek. Probably got rare fish in it. We don't know much about fish. The blackfish, they're probably all endangered. Now, this little fella. Does anyone know his name? Yeah. This is a Batman brush, and in a lot of the birds we have here, we've named them robins and magpies, but they're not actually robins or magpies. This is actually a thrush, so it's related to blackbirds, but it's a native. Beautiful animal, and I saw one of these at Lake Nelson the other day. No, not Lake Nelson, but Jubilee, sorry, I can't say Jubilee. This is a sandcell, gorgeous little thing. Comes down that spine, down the great dividing range, and morphs sort of habitat. You'll see it on the path, like that, waving and fanning its tail. Beautiful. This is a crescent honeyeater, which has a really good thing to call. And these are associated with wet forests, but everything's changing. It's kind of strange. The most west north that these have occurred in the Wombat are probably South Palato, but I've had a pair move in at my place, Porcupine Ridge, and I think that's because I've got so many flowering sages and corriers that there's enough to support an entry bird like this one. It's just stunning. Another bird of the Yantra Forest is the red-browed tree creeper. This bird is a very, it's quite a bit rarer than the white-throated tree creeper, and it really needs large, hollow trees, and it also really likes damp forests. Hard to see. I can count on my hand how many times I've seen red-browed tree creeper, so it's not your typical garden bird, but they're really a beautiful, beautiful bird. They raise their young cooperatively for the parents, so the young help the parents raise their brood. The Gengay cockatoo. Really, I thought I'd put a female in because people who are familiar with Gengays at the moment are very quick. Females are very subtle. The juveniles also look like this. They're a lovely cockatoo that's a bit quiet, so sometimes you're on the indication that you've got them there because you can just hear them. They chew the gum nuts and drop them to the forest floor. You can just hear this little rain of gum nuts and you look up and they're all quiet, which is very unusual for parrots. This little guy is only about that thick brown hornbill. Really likes shrubs, the middle layer. We've got a lot of these little tiny brown birds, and they are different depending on what forest you're in. So if we're talking wet forest, you get this kind, and dry thornbill. If you're talking dry forest, you get this kind, the dry thornbill and the black forest thornbill. If you're talking paddock, you get yellow forest thornbill. And then if you're talking the dry, deserty areas, you get yellow thornbill. So, you can do a whole talk on cornfields. Mammals, there are things about mammals as well. These are an amazing marsupial that should be as famous as a koala, but they're not for some reason. They're very quiet, and they don't do that well in captivity, I think. And they're about this big, and their tail is about that big. That's good. Massive tail. They can glide 100 meters. Yes. And they're very distinctive in that they're the only marsupial besides a koala that is solely on eucalypt. So it needs really good quality eucalypt to survive. And you can see, if you go spotlighting, they occur around the Glen Lyon area and also probably gums. And also a group, the Wombat Forest Care Group did some surveys and over a year to look at the vegetation and also the fauna of the Wombat Forest. And what did they find there? Something about temperaments?
Right, and there was one very well down in Melbourne. It was quite Oh, really?
The group is then concerned that maybe your prescribed breeding affects your breeding and ability to feed and also destroy the hollow trees of the bit. So it's a bit of a tea species, same as the red-dry tree creeper. If we've still got red gliders and red-dry tree creepers in 50 years, then you know what we're doing okay. So they're good indicators. Alright, so that's it for that stuff. This is Leech's Creek. Nola's Creek is surrounded by ferns and big manna gum. Leech's Creek, such a great photo, is polar grassland, big tussock with swamp gum. So when you are at a certain elevation and a certain soil type, you have swamp gum lying in the water courses. So I'm going to use the Leech's Creek area as an example to show some of the animals and birds you might find on that are a bit more widespread in the forest, that you might find in wet areas, plus the sort of dry-ish areas. So quite common all over. I just put this in slide to be clear. So with the river biodiversity, it's like 98% invertebrates. These are weevils on a poa stem, on a grass stem. So brushies. They're called common brush tails, but they're not actually doing that well out in the forest. They're doing okay. But again, they need really high nutrient food and hollows to survive. So I'll pop them in there. We've also got a mountain brush tail possum. He's able to put in with the wet forest, so he's more widespread. We have them because they're huge and they're also widespread. These do occur more in wet, fertile forests than dry forests, although they should be as common in dry forests. But a lot of dry forests have a little less middle layer remaining. This one, very common apparently, but very, very, very hard to see. It's very tiny.
Very tiny.
And they can accommodate about 50 animals. So imagine if you had a nest box and you looked inside and saw 50 little guys all curled up. Adorable. So they're just lovely. Familiar bird. The gorse there. So these guys will be found across all habitats. They just need shrubbery. If you've ever seen a random lion, you can see how if you find a dead wren, look at its wings. Their wings are nearly round. So they just hubble, but they don't really have much power. They actually use their long, strong legs to do all their feeding, hopping around. So they absolutely have to have shrubs so that they can get the next lot of shrubs so that they don't get eaten by any nasties. Eastern yellow robin. Beautiful. Most of you are familiar with the scarlet robin, but the yellow robin is a little shy. Most common, but they are around, they've got a pretty distinctive call. I had one visit my bird bath for the first time in, I think, 4 years the other day, which is really nice. And this is a bird bath shot. Hope you can see them. Can you see them? Mm-hmm. This is a ground goshawk, just to talk about predators. It's important to think of, when you think of biodiversity, you've got the different layers, herbivores, got all the fungi, doing anything, recycling nutrients. The predators are actually really important. At the ecology uni, it was really interesting to look at how important predators are for maintaining and keeping other populations healthy, and also keeping all the different balances in check. This goshawk woke up my husband and I, and my dog barked everything, but they didn't bark this time because this bird, which was huge, female ground goshawk, had crashed in through my window at about 10 to 7 in the morning. And Chris went down and said, oh, there's just glass everywhere. And I said, oh, what's going on? The dogs were just stunned. Anyway, I went down and this beautiful creature was on the couch. really shocked. Luckily, we had really cheap, terribly thin glass. So I just threw a towel over the bird and put it in. This was one of those awful plastic containers you put your stuff in. And I put it in there and it recovered. An hour later, it flew away completely unhurt. So this is a specialist bird. It eats other birds, and that's a female. And one of their identifying features is it looks cute. So don't miss for that. This is another predator, it's my favourite. Probably. This is taken from outside my house window. It's a copperhead snake. I wish you could see it better. I was really proud of the photo. But a lot of people think they're red-bellied light snakes because they've got a very coppery colour here, but they're actually a copperhead. They mainly eat frogs. And we've got two resident ones, and I have to say they are, there's a lowland form and a highland form, and the highland form apparently is even more calm and easygoing than the lowland form. Because my cousin lives in Charles Daniel has pretty much tried to make friends with this one on a very close, intimate level, like twice now, and it all it does is go until she goes away. So I'm really into these things, so it's great. Very fantail is very common. It's related to the rufous fantail, thanks to the fluttering. And the favorite from the fluttering and the fanning of the tail scares the insects. And that's what we And I popped in a photo here. That's the juvenile. But you see a different bird at the rhubarb or in your garden. There's a lovely soft horny brown. This is Tipperary's Ring, one of my favourite places, my mum's regular dog walking area. We've seen quite a lot of nice nature down there. There's a big dead hollow tree in the middle of the picture. And I was sitting bird watching, and a good friend of bird watching to keep an eye out for other stuff. And I saw a little thing that looked like a brown possum that was actually a rat running up the tree, and it was an antichinus. And antichinus are related to Tasmanian devils, but they're like a mouse sized version of the antichinus. I mean, I'm a Tasmanian devil, and they eat insects, and lovely little creatures, and they're probably the one that are the most common marsupials. Very, not very well known, and probably killed accidentally by people who think they're mouse. And my little calf has killed one thinking it's a rat within our kitchen, and all we can do is go to the toy. It's pretty nasty, to a fluffy dog. They look exactly the same. This is seen often, but I saw this one, I kind of can't see it, because we can't see the photo. It's about that big, and brown, with large scales. I was walking along, having to have my camera, and it just froze. So I took a photo of it. Beautiful, beautiful creature, lots of rocks in there. Oh, there's his head. Oh, and then his body. Yeah, lovely.
Thank you. Just
Yeah. Please come and look at the photos afterwards. Yeah, well, he's pretending to be sick. Quite well, too. Now, before I leave the weather areas, it's important to talk about biodiversity from a... People say, what before, it's like everything has to have a use, but sometimes it's just great to have a lot of diversity. And a really good example of this is this plant here. It's called the leafless gaultier, and Wombat Forest Center has actually discovered a population of this in the wombat. You may have read about it in the paper. That's just close up, doesn't have leaves. Just a green stem. There's Murray Ralph, and there's the population there. So, does it occur anywhere else besides the wombat at the moment? Yeah?
No. There are other ways of solving
it. Yeah, but this is the wombat one.
I
don't know,
but
it's that looks like a said, yeah, don't it? Yeah, yeah. Really interesting plant. It's not flowering or fruiting very well, so no one knows why. And no one knows why it hasn't been seen for so long and how it popped up or anything. This is another plant that's just unique to the wombat forest, the wombat bush tea. Is it Mullaria reflexifolia?
Oh, that's
anyway, well, strongly, and that's its identifying characteristic. So if you're in the wet part of the forest and you see a little shrubby thing about this seed with its leaf pointing down like that, with flowers like that, could be wombat bush tea. Special, nice. They're rare because they're only found here, but they're actually really quite locally common.
That could be very easy,
no?
Yes.
Yeah, your typical teas are like this. This is the blowhole. So now we're leaving the messmate. We're leaving the narrow leaf segments, the less manigums, the wattles are different, and the peas are different, and we're getting some different kinds of animals. Like honey and we want to include for our people, because I find my environment of biodiversity in this area is enhanced by my friends and people I go out with looking at it and enjoying it. So the blowhole is very stringy bark mainly, and if you look at the creek, I think it's Jim Crow, very different. There's no ferns, and the polar grasses are different. It's hard to see, but that's actually a really massive river of bulrush. Beautiful. Beautiful. It's a really intact kind of creek. And this is another pea. It's a wedge pea. And that's growing up the slopes. So you find this in some of the drier types like that. Mistletoe is a really important part of the drier forest. Some people think mistletoe is good as a pest because they see it on trees that look thick and then they see the mistletoe. Turns out that in the drier forest, it's the mistletoe that they think is actually what they call a keystone thing, like a keystone species, holding it all together. And why is that? It's because these leaves are really, really, really nutritious. The mistletoe is a parasite, but what it does is it draws nutrients out of the eucalypt and all the minerals and stuff. And so when the leaves fall on the ground, it actually is like fertilizer. And they found that most woodland birds they prefer nesting in mistletoe, and they also they looked at the amount of insects and spiders in mistletoe, and it's small. So it's like these little balls of nutrition supermarkets. And so some people reckon that the increase in mistletoe has actually helped the woodland birds not crash as much as they would have if the mistletoe hadn't been there. Or keeping the population up. So that's one of the only mistletoe specialists is this amazing looking honey here. It's a painted honey here. I've seen these plumes, which I'll talk about in a bit, but I'm hoping to see them a bit closer, but I haven't seen them at the blowhole. Beautiful, unusual pink bill. Last year there was heaps of them in the area, beautiful. They only eat mistletoe fruit, and they only have the mistletoe fruit as well. Remember I was talking about the spine, we get migrants coming down from Queensland, and this is one of them, the olive-backed oriole. They used to call that oriole. You have it a bit. This photo was taken by James Park on his blog. Check it out. mention it next time. Just our blog WordPress. Brilliant. And you've actually got the birds calling, because usually you just cannot see them. They're really beautiful birds. They breed down here and then head back up north. All right. So we go to another part. So we're still dancing around. This is going north. If you think of the map, this is going back up the north, so heading towards Tasmania. It's called the Upper Lachlan Flora Reserve. Dry forest, not quite a hot sign bark, but it's red stringy bark, and quite open, and this is great forest for orchids. Upper Lachlan Flora Reserve. So if you go to Porcupine Ridge Road, which is the last region north, and then drive all the way to past Mount Franklin, and then you get into the bush, then it heads to Fallen Spring, but it's just as the bush arrives. This is Gail taking a photo, beautiful photo of a spider orchid. Unfortunately, I have photos of the spider orchid, this amazing orchid, with its pollinator, a beautiful, a little hoverfly, and the orchid has deposited its pollen packages on the hoverfly, and the hoverfly was trying to get them off. Couldn't find the photo, so I was just looking everywhere it was going, couldn't find it. So that's the lesson for the label and file of digital photos. Dry open forest, we're not getting our copperhead anymore. We're now getting... Luckily he had his head in the log, so I felt happy enough to take the photo.
So
I don't know, I don't think so.
Well,
maybe they are.
They seem to be something different.
Yeah, I guess I'm just going on
what they're
around.
Have you?
Where are you? Oh, what did you get that?
Well, there's sort of not the same time. No.
Oh.
I was at the same time. But yeah. Like, copies are seen around different areas, but the time spent is seen up there. And I wonder if they would sort of hold up around the kids.
Are you in Edinburgh?
No, I'm here. Well, I am in Edinburgh, but I'm just off OJ Shura.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, I don't know. That's good to know, because I've just been seeing them around where I am.
And when I was in the city, there were a lot of times
that yeah,
they
were
around.
They like bright plants.
Sunshine.
They really like bright plant areas. Upper Lachlan, this is a bird that used to be seen in the Wombat a fair bit. It was spotted tail, but it's like a quail thrush. Quail thrush. And I go with deliberately American photo there because they're really hard to see and they're really quiet and they just run away if you ever get near them. And so I put a slightly better photo in there, which you'll have to look at afterwards. I guess I put that in there so that there's birds around that people don't see much, and so it's really great to remember that even though we're walking our dogs and cruising around, there's a whole part of nature that just happens without us. I waited, I think, 8 years and I finally saw one. I'm so excited. And that's an example of a beautiful orchid. That's a bearded orchid. Very nice. That's a really healthy one. Three flowers. Okay. Now, let's show these are characteristics of the dry forest. And beautiful little creatures. That's a really cute photo. So they have a home range of over 40 hectares. And they eat just insects, and they absolutely have to have hollow logs. And they need lots and lots of fallen timber on the ground. So they really like messy, 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 messy farms and gardens. Do not clean up. Prepare for fire around your home and just leave all the rest. Just there. It looks messy, but beetles love it. Their body's about that big, and their tail's about that big. And they, see your eyes. These are the biggest naked marsupials. Have this very strange adaptation whereby the male and female get together and mate, and then female goes off and has its pregnant young, and the males just all die. So they only breed 3 years, the males. And the anti-climbers do that as well.
Sorry.
Yeah. It is funny. People think it's really amazing. It's like, how is that evolved? That is a really weird thing. But if you think about it, if there's not that many insects in these open forests on poor soils, it means that the female and the young doesn't have to compete with the male. And so you may see anti-climbers males in July, August, and the way they June, July, the way they die is that they spend all their time running around fighting and mating and not eating until they just park it. So, pretty dramatic lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So, that's a good one for you,
Extreme.
This is a Swiss parrot. This is probably our nearest endangered bird. Like, I've been trying to get work in natural resource management and fauna and stuff for a while around here. And it's like, oh, I should be living in the grasslands to get all this funding for endangered species. Whereas here, all of our species, even if they're declining locally, they're not actually listed as threatened or anything. So maybe our greater vital populations are going down. Or we're not seeing as many koalas as they used to, but they're all regarded as least concerned here. This is our nearest rare bird. It's a Swiss parrot. Beautiful. Nectar specialist. So you see them out in the box on the back areas. So what I'm doing now with the Swiss parrot, I'm in a photo, and I'm heading out to the Queen's Way and talking about birds that you wouldn't see around here. Okay. Animals, other animals. Painted button quails, I mention these guys because you often don't see them, but they have this really interesting pattern. They go, they feed in little groups, and the way they feed, you know, if you see some, like, holes, little round circles in the leaf litter, very neatly in dry forest, they're called platelets. And they reckon that the button quails feed in a little circular motion, for their insects and leave these little circles in the forest. They're tiny little things. Button quails, they are related to quails, I think, but they're not. Or are they? No, they're probably uniquely Australian, but they look like quails. So that's a picture of Iron Fox Ironbark. A lot of them are logged out. There's not that many left. And there's not many bottom ones either. They're incredibly interesting. Beautiful. Sugar glider? Ethan here is sugar gliders are found in both time wet forests and dry forests, but they're also found in wet forests. But they're found in greater numbers in wet forests. So that's in the next book. So that brings us to the parallel. Parallel is a really good example of an animal that does occur across these different habitats, but in different numbers. In the wombat, a parallel can eat greater gliders, baby koalas, possums, all sorts of things like that. They're all really fat and meaty and nutritious. In the Rock Lion Bar region, because of the drought and land management and people taking out wattles because they're getting weeds and stuff like that, there's a lot less middle layer, but there's a lot less possums around than there used to be. Things like common brush shells aren't common anymore. So, in the wombat, a home range might be 500 hectares, 800, even 1,000 hectares. In the box ironbark, one pair of parallels has to range over 5,000 hectares to get enough food to feed themselves and the chick. And they also do this thing called prey switching, and so they're eating mainly sleeping galahs, I said sleeping because I probably get them, galahs and cockatoos. So they're having to eat birds which are and nutritious. So then there's not as many baby owls being born, so that's kind of interesting. So if you live in the really dry areas, plant wattles. Hooded robin. Put this one in here because it's dry, it's a related to our little robins, but they're really rare. They seem to need really big areas of good quality forest or woodland to sit. Lovely. You can see these at Mount Beckwith. I didn't realise Mount Beckwith was actually part of the Federal Shire, I just never seen it. going there. Then who's been there? Isn't it? Yeah. Where is it? Remember that map of the Hebron Shire? It's right on this edge. You can also see that I went to a reserve called Dunak Conservation Reserve, which is out past Queens. And I haven't seen a triple warbler yet, but that's another little dry forest bird that's not going so well because they like feeding on the ground. They like to eat the meat of it. Little insectivorous bird. I'd love to see one. See what happens. Okay, so won't get used. Diamond firetail finches. Beautiful. Yeah, they're lovely birds. Now, why am I called a Woodshow Eagle in the corner here? Anyway, when I went out for a bird on the excursion, there was a big Woodshow Eagle nest, and this guy, very cleverly, had put nests in the wedgie nest. So that's a really great way to protect their young. in the bottom. So that you have a big nest, let's say a big nest here, and the eagle comes in and does its own thing, and then unbeknownst, it's on the bottom. Yeah, it's very clever. Very common. Very, very common, actually, around the world. You get a lot of birds nesting either next to wasps' nests or next to predators, right next to goshawks and things. Maybe the birds are small, like the eagle wouldn't really bother. Plus, eagles don't actually eat birds. They eat mammals generally, although they like eating mammals and they like and stuff like that. Now, budgies. I never thought I'd see budgies within driving distance of here, but I went to Dunak Conservation Reserve and I saw five budgies foraging on the ground. And apparently they haven't been seen there since the 80s, and it was a miracle.
And they naturally
good. Yeah, they come in occasionally from the dry areas, and they think their young birds just kind of, cruising around. So that's a lovely photo there. So that really brings home the point. Okay, you've got budgies at one point, and then you've got Nolan's Creek picnic ground, which is tall, wet forest with like incredible fungi and totally different ferns and everything. So that brings me news. I just put an Eastern Rhodian group here, because these two rivers that I know are common animals as well. And that's it. Thanks very much. If anyone's got any questions, just ask.
Yeah.
Broad, wide range of views, a big topic.
And I wasn't sure what it was that you were saying was the reason why they were so different.
The reason? If you look at the original map, I'll just get back to that. It's to do with, if you think of it in it with what they call bioregional concept, but the, see that line there? Different. That means that the soil and the altitude and the rainfall are different. So they're different envelopes to the blowhole. So what you've got is, they call it a depression zone. It's like one thing and then it changes into another. Sometimes that happens gradually, and then other times it's just as quick as anything.
So I'm sort of associating with the tiny colony that was done, say, around the Tipperary area, where people in mining and a lot of turning over.
Yeah. Well, I think you find that probably nearly everything has been turned over around here, all over the shop. So that means that that would be a degrading factor or some sort of pressure that would probably be equally applied across here.
Well, I just noticed the around the forest area where we are, it's nearly all deeply mined or it's popped with the shafts.
Yeah.
But the actual surface is really well still badly damaged. Mm-hmm. It's not the same as that if they're closer to Castle Main, and it's where they've actually done more remedial work and they've used water under pressure to wash away the surface soil and things like that. And I was wondering, that might have a lot to do with the fact that you've got that really marginal, relatively marginal land in the forest down that end.
Not sure. Because to me, it's like rainfall and geology and aspects are what they are, no matter what the mining pressures were put on them in the past. So you still get your bioregional changes across the land. And then others put it up in big piles. So yeah, but definitely it would be like a collective purpose chart to determine what is missed. All of this sort of bioregional stuff and ecological vegetation classes, people are really working. They're really trying to work out what it might have looked like before we got in and did 200 years worth of stuff to it. So yeah, it's a good question. But what we forget in Delta,
did you say it was in Delta?
Yeah. It was so close to all the forests. When it was all those fires and stuff, I kept looking at maps just to try and work out if anywhere it was safe. It's not. But, and you just really look, wow, if you were a bird, or even an echidna, who has a home range also at 40 hectares, cruising across West Street is just no problem at all if they're trying to get to Dr. Gully. So we need to really be mindful that even though we're in the top primary group destination of Victoria or whatever, we actually live in the forest. This is a forest town first and foremost. I think because we're not surrounded by those stark mega hills of forest like you get in Blackwood or Marysville, we forget that we're actually a forest town. It's almost like the forests are behind the restaurants and bars and stuff, so it's not so much in our mind. So that's all right. Mm-hmm. Well, you should just get out of the car and get a good food.